Welcome back, or welcome to, the Single Track Podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and in this episode, we talk with Buzz Burrell, co-founder of FastestKnownTime.com, a tracking website that has been cataloging the modern FKT movement here in the United States and abroad, to my knowledge, for the better part of the last decade, perhaps even longer. While there is no governing body for FKT certification, FastestKnownTime.com has filled the void, acting as the informal arbiter of these records. We spend the majority of the conversation getting into the details about the recent sale of FastestKnownTime.com to Outside Magazine earlier this month. But there's a lot more to Buzz that is interesting that we delve into at various points. For example, he's been trail and ultra running since the late 1960s and has set a wide array of fastest times and first attempts at many routes that we consider classic here in the United States, including the Colorado Trail and the John Muir Trail. And in addition to his work on the FKT site, he has also been an athlete manager for La Sportiva, a brand director for Ultimate Direction, and he's actually joining Ultra Running Magazine as a regular columnist, I believe, next month. If you enjoyed our conversations last year with Mark Ganey and Larissa Rivers at Strava, or our conversation with Joe Venere at Fit Insider, I think you will dig this one. Let's get started. Welcome, Buzz. Buzz Burrell, welcome to the Single Track Podcast.
Thanks very much, Finn. It's nice to meet you, however virtually it may be.
We will definitely be talking at length about all things FastestKnownTime.com, but there are a few questions I've always wanted to ask you. And since I have you here, you've been in the sport quite a while, and presumably in eras when the sport was not quite as popular as it is now. And I've always been curious, what's it like to be a part of something during its mostly underground or truly niche phases?
I like that question. I have been around, you know, a long time. After all, I did sit next to Jesus in the third grade. But it's kind of, that's not how I perceive it, really. I'm just doing what I'm doing. So I don't really generate that perspective. Wherever I am is what I'm doing. It's like if you're running a 100-miler, if you start thinking about the finish, oh man, you're in trouble. So you're thinking about where you are. And so while I appreciate the question, I used to run, you know, 10 miles, you know, long distance on the roads, wearing cotton shorts, cotton t-shirt, and split leather running shoes. They weren't actually running shoes. They were Converse All-Stars. But that's just what I was doing. So I don't know. You know what I mean? So when you say, what's it like? I said, I don't know what it's like. It's kind of like it is now, because whatever it's like now, 20 years from now, it won't be like this either.
Well, like, for example, what was responsible for you feeling inspired to try to do the JMT in under 4 days? Well, because I know, like, I only got into the sport 5 or 6 years ago, and I have the serendipity of social media to thank, but yeah, I'm just curious, like, I was lucky in that sense. And so I'm just curious, what inspired you?
Right. Well, that's a very fair question. And somehow that comes down to personality, really. It's like, I'm always curious about what's around the corner. You know, when I go out, I used to run and train. Nowadays, you know, it's kind of on the watch, and maybe even have a training plan. I kind of didn't used to do that. I just wanted to see what was around the next bend. So I'd go out and say, what's up here? Yeah. You know, and so I just sort of explore. And then you kind of just keep going on that. I do local things. I do things that are a little bit less local. And I hear about things. And like you said, social media changed the world. Suddenly, vroom, it all tightened up. You could see it all. You're in this little fishbowl. But back then you weren't. So that your question is good. I am not answering it very well. All I can say is I just kept trying to see what was around the next bend. The JMT, once I read the stats on it, were phenomenal, right? It's 223 miles without a road crossing. It's the most unique trail in the world, 7 wilderness areas. And I see the stats and I say, okay, I want to go do this.
Yeah. Well, I guess the reason I'm curious is because as I was prepping for this interview today, it dawned on me that I have never been an early adopter to anything. I've always been in like the middle of the adoption curve. So I can't say I've ever been a trailblazer. So I'm just fascinated.
Well, good for you. It's a lot easier. your joke is the bleeding edge, right? It's supposed to be the cutting edge, but sometimes it doesn't feel that way.
Another question I want to ask you, because I think it's a topic that a lot of people are discussing in our sport today. Trail running is definitely growing. Like if I look at participation year over year, decade over decade, it's growing. This is just my personal opinion. The professional side of the sport is not growing nearly as fast. Like I think we're 10 to 15 years in, correct me if I'm wrong, to athletes getting paid, but it's still incredibly difficult to make a living, not even just as an athlete, but like race directing has low margins, coaching, unless you want to like forego personalization, it's really hard to scale. It's just hard to make it in the sport. And so I'm curious if you have any thoughts as to whether that will start to improve soon.
Well, thank you. And I do have a thought on that. I can be a little more coherent than I have in your previous two good questions, which is I am not concerned about this. We live in a market economy. So if someone values what you do, they'll pay you for it. And if they don't, they won't. And you have to decide what you want to do about that. And so coming from where I have, as you know, I'm going to run. Right. As long as I can, I am. And whether someone pays me for that is not really of concern of mine. And if someone wants to get paid, make a living doing that, that's great. But in a way, sport is the same as art. You know, you really want to guarantee funding for this. That's a line I'm sure I really want to cross. Personally. So I think we're in a market economy. So if you were a race director, you put on something that people want to do, and you were a good business person, and you manage your event very, very well. And by the way, you had Footy on, right, a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And he talked about the rut. But that was really good. He spelled it out. This guy is buttoned up. He's a good business person. He's looking after his runners. He's taking care of things. And they're making money on this. It's my presumption.
Yeah.
Good, they're providing a service. But if you putz it, you're not going to make money on that. That's fair enough, too. It's a market-based economy. Now, when it comes to pro runners, hey, if you want to quit your job or don't go to college or do whatever you want and become a pro runner, great. It's terrific. But if you're not making money doing that, well, don't look at me, right? It's a market-based economy here. And the people who just make just absurd amounts of money, of course, are soccer players. I mean, it's ungodly. It's like one soccer player makes more than all the presidents of the United States put together. I think that's just sick, but the market is there, apparently. Apparently enough people buy tickets and watch games on TV, and so it's worth it to pay someone literally $20 million to kick a football. That's not for you or I to decide. That's for the market. And for anyone listening to this, you vote with your dollar, right? Where your money goes is what's happening. So that's it's sort of in your control.
Yeah, I like that answer. Well,
you sort of like
it. I think that there is some responsibility. I think that there is some responsibility that falls on the shoulders of people who are in the media in our sport. And I guess maybe I'm not really that big of a person, but it's partly me. Creating fans. I think that when you create more fans of the sport, you can create more opportunities as a result for the athletes in the sport, race directors, etc. I was just listening to a podcast about a month or two ago where back in the 50s and the 60s, NFL players were making the equivalent today of $5,000 or $6,000 a year, and they had to work jobs as insurance salesmen and teachers in the offseason, and there was no fandom around the sport yet. And these owners of teams took it upon themselves to go out and literally create fans at the top end of the sport. I think that that's something we could do in ultra running, is just create more fans.
I like that.
And not just participants.
Right. I very much appreciate that, and Footy spoke to that because he came back from Europe. I mean, let's just put that word right on the table right now, Europe.
Yeah.
And anyone who's been there say, whoa, this is a little different. So here in the States, we have this granola vibe of trail and ultra running where people are literally, you know, dressed in brown. And if they're not, it's like, whoa, look at that show off. And Europe is, at least France, is kind of on the other end of the spectrum where they have these one-piece spandex kits. It's like, whoa, that's kind of a weird look too. But somewhere in between is a little reasonable. And when you're doing a race there, they're putting on a show. You know, they got the big inflatable arc, and they got some crazed announcer yelling something. And so it's a show. And it's on, first time I raced in Europe, where was that? It was in Italy. And there's this helicopter. I said, what? Wow, there's a helicopter here. I realized it was TV. It was on TV live because they're putting on a show. And I think Mike said, yeah, he wanted to bring some of that back to the rut. I said, yeah, baby, I like that. Broken Arrow is kind of like that. Some people don't like that. Some people don't want that. Great. It's market-based. I think we'll always have a place to find your place here. But as you ask, if you want more money to come in, then you have to give people a reason to watch.
One more question I have for you before we dive into the FKT business. Again, this is just my opinion. It seems to me that there are a lot of folks, including some very prominent people in the community, that don't want this FKT scene to scale because they fear I'll use the word commodification that they're trying to avoid in the event-based world of our sports, so like formal races. And I'm curious if you share those same concerns or if you're optimistic that the growth of the FKT community is a net good and that it's a good thing to like spread the gospel of it.
Right. It's a little unclear to me. It's, to be honest, Finn, I'm somewhat confused by the nature of the query. So, for example, does that mean that Peter, Jeff, and I should have kept doing what we're doing? Is that the nature of the question? Then my answer would be, well, you should have contributed money. You know, I'll just look someone right in the eye. If someone says, we kind of liked it really down home the way it was, and then I could just give you a number. We started a Patreon account. We solicited Patreon subscribers, and we were getting just a little above $500 per month. And so if a person says, I'd like it to stay the same, then I would say, well, did you contribute to Patreon? Then if they say no, they say, well, do you get paid for what you do? Or would you like me not to get paid for what I do? So it's this really odd, this is kind of this strange little disconnect that I think most people have revenue in their personal lives. Yeah. So any undertaking has to have revenue. Otherwise, people are going to say, this is dumb, I'm going to stop doing it. And so for someone who has revenue in their own life to suggest that a service they are using shouldn't also have revenue is somewhat odd. Now, if someone says they like Jeff, Peter, and me, then my response is, great, thank you. We really, really appreciate the dedicated community we've had. I'm not saying this because, you know me, I'm going to be honest no matter what.
Sure.
I really appreciate the community we've had. And so if someone feels passionate, saying, oh, man, I'm afraid of what outside is going to do with this, my response is, good, stay on it. You know, keep everyone on their toes. You know, feed this back. And if you think I'm being a complete dick, let me know. I mean, I probably won't like to hear it, but I will hear it. And so passion, caring is great. And that will anyone who's listening to this, if you have feelings, thoughts on this topic, keep them coming, baby. You are the community. Mm. People are listening to you and what you want. And again, they will do what you want with where you're putting the almighty dollar. So let's just say that right now. That is just an absolute fact. If you are an environmentalist and you turn on the light switch and leave the light switch on, you're paying your power company to go burn more coal. If you put PV on the panels on your roof, you're paying, you know, for renewable energy. So you are always voting with your dollar. So you have a lot of responsibility in what this world looks like. And again, thank you for caring.
And by the way, I definitely want to dig into all of that. I think I meant the question more in the following way, because I had Anton on the podcast a couple episodes ago, and we had a disagreement on this. I asked him what his plans were for 2022, and he said, I'm going to do a lot more backcountry stuff, a lot more stuff that doesn't have to do with the formal racing scene. And I asked him, do you have any interest in, you know, lobbying more runners in our community to buck the racing scene or buck the formal event scene and move over to FKTs? And, you know, we had a little bit of a disagreement on that. And so I think I meant the question more like, are you in the camp of, you know, I've spent the last couple decades of my life stoked on FKTs, and I see it as part of my role in the community to be public about how much I love it. And I think more runners who are in the scene should take on that ambassador role as well. Or should they be like kind of secretive about it and just like, you know, keeping it to themselves?
Ghost it. That's a term, by the way. So I'm putting it out there. It's called ghosting. Well, first, that was an excellent podcast with Anton. Really liked it. And as I think everyone who listened would concur, he's a very thoughtful, insightful person. And I'm...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I actually... this is really interesting. I became a little envious of Anton listening to that podcast. Because, by the way, I was the first person to sponsor him, which is sort of an odd little bit of trivia. So we go back a little bit there. And in the meantime, you know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I'm working up my cost grid, getting my bombs in and getting my ultimate direction. You know, I'm just grinding, baby. And I'm justifying it to the, you know, Sun Capital Partners who own it. And I'm working with athletes on that level. And I'm, you know, tracking to 274% compound annual growth rate. And Tony's out there, you know, running 3 hours a day and then reading a book and drinking a coffee and thinking. And it showed, wow, he's so thoughtful and he's articulate. I became envious that I wish I had the time or I had developed the thoughtfulness that he had. So I was impressed with that podcast. Thank you.
Well, there's a great quote. The future is here. It's just not evenly distributed yet. And I do believe that people like Anton represent the future, where the biggest problem in our lives, I'm going to say a decade, maybe two decades from now, is going to be the problem of leisure. What are we going to do with all sorts of free time? And that's going to be people in their 20s, their 40s, their 60s. And I think that Anton is a model for what life could be like. And I think it's a good life.
All right. Well, you mentioned in your question, which I am getting to here, pardon me, which camp I am. And Anton and I think fairly similar. And he said something that I remember it because that's me too. It's real hard for me to tell someone else what to do. It's like, is that really my role in life? Instead, I have always done, which I think he does as well, inspire. I'm going to do what I do. I have a vision. I have a feeling. Like you said, early adoption, I am a very visionary person. I'm always getting my bell rung and I'm answering that bell. It's taking me unexpected places. And I might say, hey, this is very cool. This is kind of fun. Have a look at this. But to say, how can we get more people to do it? I kind of start to balk at that. So in terms of FKTs, I'm a big promoter. You've probably heard me say, I say this quite frequently, you know, you can pay $200 to enter the New York City Marathon. It's going to be $2,000 or $3,000 for the weekend. And you're going to go out there with a run with 49,999 of your closest friends. Or you could do an FKT with you and your bestie, or your dog for that matter, in Yosemite National Park, where it's illegal to do a race. So to me, FKTs is an extraordinary opportunity. It's really viable. And so I'm a big promoter, but it'd be hard for me to say how should we get more people to do it.
Okay. Well, I think we should get into the conversation about the business. And just for table stakes, to accommodate maybe the 1-5% of listeners that don't know what fastestknowntime.com is, could you provide just like an elevator description?
Yep. Fastest Known Time, well, it's two things. It's a concept and it's a website, fastestknowntime.com. You could go there right now. But the concept is an unofficial record. A record, to my mind, is something that is official because there's a timer, there's some sort of certifying agency, some sort of officialdom. Like if you do the Boston Marathon and you do it in, you know, 2:02, that's an official record because there's been, you know, hundreds of people watching. A fastest known time explains itself with the three words. This is the fastest time that we know. When I got into this, and by the way, I did not invent the term, but I obviously helped popularize it. And my origination story is when Peter and I did the John Muir Trail, year 2000. And man, I dug into that. I spent tons of time digging in to see who had the fastest time. And it was hard. So that prompted Peter and I said, man, let's start keeping track. We want to give everyone a place to play. But I also noticed that we can't be sure because someone else might have gone out and done something and just kept it to themselves. And Finn, as you mentioned about coming up in the world of social media, this is like pre-internet type stuff. And so it's hard for someone now, it's really hard to imagine no internet. Because you had to find out about these things by reading it in a magazine or writing someone a letter or what? How did you do it? And so fastest known time was quite literal. And then to know more, just go to the website.
Well, with the website, I'm curious if the motivation was more about scratching your own itch or doing something on behalf of the community. And I'm asking that because I'm fascinated by what made you want to contribute to our sport in such a big way. Because for anybody that's ever been a part of a startup, for example, it is a freaking grind.
Well, kudos to you, Finn, because you're doing, you know, the single track podcast. So I'm, you know, right back at you. Correct assessment there. Yes, I would like to say I'm the world's nicest guy, but people who know me would say, no, that's not true. I think we were scratching our own itch. And we do feel part of the community. We do really like people a lot. I'm a people person. And we wanted to give people a place to play. We wanted to provide a structure that we didn't have, right? So, okay, it's like a race. I want to do this race. No one else is doing this race. I'll start the race. And so you can say, well, did you do this for yourself or for other people? They kind of go together a little bit. So people who sort of resonated with Peter, with what Peter and I had been doing all along, you know, for decades prior, they said, hey, yeah, I'm down with that. And now I have a place to play. And then once we did the new website 4 years ago, almost to the date, then it was good enough. It was interactive enough. Jeff Schuler, our third partner, did an excellent job. And so that people could walk in there and they had a structure that they could participate in rather readily without having to figure it all out. So I'm, you know, it's a bigger question, Finn. You know, it's like altruism. Is there any such thing as altruism? That's an interesting question, but we won't get into that.
I would love to get into that, but maybe we'll save it for the end of the podcast. Has the website always been a project that you wanted to turn into a business that you were generating revenue with and turning a profit? Or was it something that ultimately picked up steam and then you realized, like, after a couple months or a couple years, like, this could be something where I could make money off of, maybe sell one day?
I definitely wanted to turn it into a business. Absolutely. Because I, with a fairly long history and a very long history in 501c3s, I've started 501c3s. I've been on the board. I still am on the board of one. It's not sustainable unless you have a revenue stream. It's like, how long are people going to volunteer? So if you're doing good work and you're not getting paid for it, eventually you're probably going to stop unless you're Mother Teresa, which I am not. And so I like business. I think business is a win-win. Business is how we balance services and value. I think greed and avarice and unfairness are bad, but I think business is terrific. And so I definitely always wanted that. I expected that. I don't think Peter did. Peter is a data scientist. I mean, he's an extremely intelligent person. And he loved setting this up. He loved processing the data. He really liked that back end. And once he got that going and it was just up and humming, he was like, okay, there it is. We did it. We're successful.
I know that at least in the early years of it, you were balancing other responsibilities at maybe it was La Sportiva or Ultimate Direction. I'm curious, do you think that this was something that you could have continued to do part-time, or did you need to go full-time on it for it to achieve this escape velocity to where it became such a known entity in the community? Big audience, a lot of website visitors, a lot of email addresses, a lot of user-generated content, and then you sell to outside.
Right. I needed time. Other people might not. But I sleep at night. You know, like those recommendations you see, you read about how much hours of sleep you should get. I actually do that. People I know who don't need that much sleep, they could have worked a full-time job and done this. But not me. And so I went to half. This was always on my mind. And Peter is keeping the ball afloat, really, really holding down the fort with a free template online called Pro Boards for about 10 years. This was always on my mind. I went to halftime at UD, which enabled me to put in halftime on fastest known time. Giving you a trade secret here, I never worked full-time on fastest known time. I don't think Peter did. I don't think Jeff did either. We became...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, we weren't at that level. Starting it up, there was a lot of time there, particularly Jeff, who wrote custom code for the whole thing. Everything you see, Jeff wrote code for. And then Peter just ground out the data entry as he transferred the data over onto the new website, which there was no macro to do. There wasn't like wrote this great algorithm to transfer it all over. Peter keyed it all in. Yeah. So that was quite a lot of work.
Yeah.
But then after that, Finn, this is the truth of the matter is we never worked full time after that. We became extremely efficient. We basically didn't have meetings. Okay. The three of us just did shit. We didn't really have a hierarchical structure. And Peter did what he did. Jeff did what he did. I did what I did. I just tried to keep my time really efficient because I wasn't getting paid anything. I had to keep my time efficient. And so it was kind of an interesting backstory in that regard. But it also explains why I think some of our quality could have been a lot better. I mean, podcast, of course, yeah. I did 180 episodes of the podcast. I think they're fairly good. But man, the audio quality.
I just listened to the last one. The last one was excellent.
Oh, Laz, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you saying that. But the audio quality was never that good. We never edited. I mean, people say, so how much did you edit? We didn't edit. Craig occasionally would take out a gap. Other than that, what we recorded is what you got done. Over next.
Yeah.
And that was efficient. That helped us keep the ship afloat, but it wasn't the best quality. So I'm very, very appreciative that our listeners stuck with us and liked it and gave us good feedback. And I always felt a little irked because I would like to provide our customers and our community with better services than I did. I always felt like I was falling very short. I wanted to do a better job.
Interesting. Well, two comments. One, and I'm just thinking of this in this moment, you reminded me, I think one benefit to being part-time is you never get to a point of desperation where you need money coming in the door, and therefore you can stay true to your audience throughout the whole process, which I think is huge. You never have to make any deals with the devil. Number two, I think I'm really impressed by the amount of user-generated content that was inherent to your website. Like, that angle is brilliant because it takes so much work off your plate. And from the very outset, there is a vested interest in the audience contributing to the platform because everything about it appeals to their self-interest. They want to document something amazing they did. They want to document it in detail. They want to contribute photos, videos, blog reports, you name it. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And I don't think we have... Maybe Strava is another example, but there's very few businesses in our sport that are user-generated in nature. And now that I think about it, I think that's one of the future models for our sport is more user-generated content businesses.
Finn, that's very perceptive.
Sorry, I was rambling there.
No, that was extremely perceptive. It'd be interesting to turn this conversation back in your direction because it was a very sharp insight. Your point number one in particular, because we weren't, on the rivet, we could maintain true to our vision. I think that was very sharp. Mm-hmm. I should note that Jeff Schuler, he has his own freelance web development business. He works for himself. Yeah. He works full time. And so he had to keep his time with FKT very minimal because his money was being made somewhere else. He was supporting himself somewhere else. But I appreciate your comment on that.
Yeah. Well, I think the other question I want to ask on this is, why did you decide to sell now? Why in this moment? Why 2022? And then I think I heard on your conversation with Dylan earlier that there were multiple potential suitors, like it wasn't just outside that was in the mix. So why outside as well?
Right. Two questions there. Well, I wanted to sell it 2 years ago. What happened is we had, you know, stage one. We got the whole show on the road. Jeff did a great job designing the whole system. It took us a year to work out kinks, maybe like 2 years to get it really so it wasn't just killing us operationally. You know, so the submission process became somewhat more automated. It wasn't automated, but it became web-based instead of very manual, et cetera, et cetera. Our guidelines, we brought in volunteer regional editors. Allison Mercer was a big contributor. Craig Randall came on to help out in a few things. And so we became operational. We'd done it. FKTs were here to stay. They were in use and known all over the world. It became part of the endurance sport lexicon. Then it's like, okay, what's next? And for me, I'm a multi-sport person anyway, but we had people writing in, say, I just biked this. I just skied this. I got an FKT on it. Put it on your site. I said, no, we can't. We only do running and hiking. This was grating on me. Because once we had the whole infrastructure, let's just expand it to other sports, right? It's the same platform. It's the same structure. Let's just pick up biking. Let's pick up skiing. Let's pick up paddling. And then we can serve the community much better. By the same token, I think you've probably heard me say this before, but it's so dramatic, I'll say it again. Right now, it's winner take all. It's one and done. And so you literally, the fastest known time is an interesting concept. Because if you come in second, we don't give you the time of day. I mean, you could go out and do the Appalachian Trail. And if you come in 1 minute slower than the current record, your name doesn't even appear on the website. That's a little weird. So from a business perspective, it's terrible. Because then our great routes, the ones that track a lot of the tension, you know, the 80-20 rule, don't get any play if the time is too fast because people can't break the record. And so from a business perspective, it's just idiotic. We need a leaderboard, maybe just 10 deep, that's all. Or maybe just resetting it each year so you have your FKT for 2020, 2021, 2022, et cetera. Or something of that nature, same with age groups, like one age group. And we need to do the web development on that. We didn't do it.
Yeah.
And so from a business perspective, it was just dumb. Because you can't get the revenue you need out of the work we're putting into it. Because it takes a certain amount of work to upload the route, takes a certain amount of work to verify the FKT. And unless people are looking at it, iterating it, trying for it, spectating it, the work isn't justified with the donations that we were getting in. It was just a terrible business model. And then by the same token, it's all the same, we weren't serving the community. People want this. Once a week, people want this. I'm actually still seeing what comes in. And someone just wrote in, they're going to go for the FKT on canoeing the Mississippi River. Like, wow, that's so cool. I mean, there is FKTs for canoeing the Mississippi River. And this particular team got stormed off in the Mississippi Delta, you know, after like 20 days or something, last attempt. So now they're going to try it again. Of course, we write back, no, we don't do that. Like, dang, I want to do that. So from a business perspective, we need to broaden and deepen our offering. And we need to do the exact same thing anyway to serve the community better. I didn't think we were serving the community. So that's a long way of explaining. That's the context for why I wanted to sell the business, because we were not going to do this. We needed to bring in new owners who had the horsepower to better serve this community.
what were the assets that Outside was most interested in? So when you were at the negotiation table with them and presumably giving them a deck of, you know, here are the highlights of FKT.com, what were they really leaning into?
Right. That's a good question. I think the generic term is blue sky. And so you have the traditional multiples, you know, based on EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, and deductions, and amortization, and gross revenue. But that's not what we have. Our revenue is poor. And so Outside saw the community, I think. We had a very dedicated community. They saw the brand, because there's a, pardon me, but there's many podcasts, right? As you were all aware, there's a lot of podcasts. And of course, with social media, it's very hard for any media company to make money, to stay afloat, to deliver quality content, because there's crummy quality content for free on social media. So social media is really good. It's free. You know, you can connect with people. But on the other hand, it drops the bottom out of it. So only the strong survive providing quality content. And with FKT, you can't, there's no one else is going to do it. This is it. If you want to do a fastest known time, you come to this website. Well, if you want to start a race, you start another race. If you want to start another magazine, another podcast, another blog, you do as many as you want. But for FKTs, we are it. And so I think Outside liked the community, liked the potential. And potential used to be, when I was early days of business, that used to be called blue sky.
How big is the audience for the site? Like, how many daily website visitors, how many email addresses do you guys have collected?
Oops, man, you caught me on that one. I'd have to go
roughly
pull up my numbers on this. I think they are fairly, when we were presenting the opportunity here, of course, I had a PowerPoint presentation, had this all on the slides, and I tend not to think about this, so I'm not dodging the question. I'm a real people person. I want to talk to people. I want to communicate. I want to spread the vision, and the numbers. I have to kind of discipline myself to look at them. You know what I mean? I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I see something that's really cool, and I want to deliver it. And I would love it if lots of people also liked it. But if only some people also like it, I'm okay with that, as long as I think it's cool and helpful.
With Outside coming in, what do you anticipate will be some of the first improvements that they make to the platform?
Well, they brought in some heavy hitters. First of all, they came in, you know, their Series B funding raised a fair amount of capital, enabled them to make a fair number of acquisitions. And they staffed this up with some really sharp people. And interestingly enough, I was a little put off at first because they came in with tech people. But on the other hand, that's what the site needs. It really needed a technical upgrade big time. So don't ask me, you have to ask Outside. But my personal guess, I had to give this disclaimer, my personal guess is they're going to improve the user experience. They're going to make that website a lot easier to use, a lot easier to navigate. My guess is, don't quote me on this, is they're going to integrate the map with the map on Gaia and Trail Forks, which is two very good products. You know, Gaia is an outstanding product. You know, it's not a content type product. It's different than us, but the back end is extremely good. Trail Forks, in my opinion, is one of the better, you know, navigation apps out of 10 of them. I think they're going to integrate those. They're going to take some of those back end engines and make it the same, and so that the user, the visitor, is going to have a better, easier experience, and they will be able to possibly navigate. Maybe have user pages, so you can list the FKTs that you'd like to achieve, and you can start ticking them off, and people can follow that. You see what I mean? I think there's a lot of user experiences that are possible here, and Outside has the resources and the knowledge, and I think the commitment to bring those to you. which we didn't. So I mean, just to be clear here, we weren't going to do it. I wanted to do it. We weren't going to do it. They want to do it. They can do it.
This is a question that I struggle with in many aspects of life, not just in this particular circumstance, but how important do you think it is for the people that are working on this website to be subject matter experts and or just like really embedded in the community, like living and breathing FKTs?
I think you need one person who's a really good listener or who knows it. And the people who, you know, maybe someone's going to upgrade the map feature. You know, yeah. It's a map, right? It's okay. You don't have to run 100-miler to upgrade the map feature. I'm sorry, I think it's very cool if everyone was like that, but you certainly need one person who is a good listener or tuned into the community, and the product manager, whom I used to call the brand manager, but now they're called product managers for outside, is an exceptional individual. Devin Lehman, he's sharp. He's very high bandwidth. He's very with it, if you pardon the vernacular. So he's going to pay attention to what needs to be done. I feel pretty confident about that. I actually just met with him an hour and a half ago. So I'm sort of speaking from a certain amount of insider knowledge on that, is I can give a strong recommendation to Devin, the product manager for Fastest Known Time.
Yeah, and presumably if you're working for Outside Magazine, in some way, shape, or form, you're passionate about the outdoors. And I think that that's got to translate over to some extent.
I will speak to that. That is a corporate culture. That's called corporate culture. And they definitely have that. If you meet the people, and there's quite a few people to meet, they're all recreating. I mean, there's maybe the janitor isn't, I don't know. But everyone else, they're athletes. You know, look at the different titles. And of course, they have yoga journal, you know, they have climbing, they have trail runner, backpacker. You talk to these people, they're doing the sports, they're very active. And so I can definitely vouch that the corporate culture is strong outdoor. And here's something that's important to me. I think you've read this in Outside Magazine, environmentally oriented. They do a lot of pieces on public lands and the environment. Yeah. They're really clear on that. That's very important to me personally. Hopefully it is to other people too. So I think that's good. If they were just kind of like, whatever, let's sell some SUVs, I wouldn't feel good about that. But I think they have a good environmental ethic as well. And lastly, I will say from my limited personal experience, they're very nice people.
What have been the biggest objections you have heard from the community about the sale to Outside, and what would your response be?
I am not qualified to answer the question. I'm not on social media. So I post to Facebook about once a month. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on Instagram. And so, Finn, I'm giving you free invitation to relay concerns to me, and I will then be able to answer them.
One of the most compelling ones that I've heard is that there'll be this sort of multifaceted paywall, in that it may no longer be free to browse routes or to submit reports. So do you have any insight on that?
Yeah, I do have insight on that, because I think that is a reasonable question, because Outside have a function or a program, I should say, called Outside Plus. And so there's like 30 titles. And you have better access. You have the full range of access if you participate in Outside Plus, which is like $99 a year. I think there's occasional 20% discounts. Mm. And then you have much better access. You're behind the paywall, so to speak, which I should note, I do. I have an Outside Plus membership. And personally, I think it's worth it. At least for me, it is. Because, for example, I get one free entry. One of the other titles is Roll Massif, which is a bicycle racing. So you get one free entry into a race and things like that. Gaia is a kick-ass app. You get entrance into that. So I cannot speak for outside, but I can say, because I actually asked Devin this very question, because I thought you might ask me, and he said, no, we're not going behind the paywall at this time. We really want to respect the community. We don't want to rock the boat. We don't want to, you know, raise any alarms. We want to learn and grow with this community. And I can just give you that, you know, backstory, inside story that is what I've heard, and I actually believe that, and it's impressive, really, because I also, he didn't say this, but I'm going to speak for them. They're going to need revenue at some point. You need revenue, yeah, because, yeah, no one's working for free,
yeah,
and to provide the service that you and I just talked about, they're going to need to really put some time and effort into this development, and so they're going to need to generate revenue, and so expect to see that. And a quick heads up to everybody, yeah, we all work for a living. They do too.
And it's really, yeah, doesn't matter how big or small you are. It's tough. The margins are tough being a media company.
Well, just a quick side, you're asking about the history of this. And Finn, I really appreciate that you have a business sense. Personally, you do. And on your podcast, you're talking about it because it's actually very interesting. I think people can listen to, you know, Jane, who went out and just ran a really fast 50 miles, which is great. That's super fun. But what's happening behind the curtain? Mm-hmm. You know, there's some, why is, yeah, Jane there? What shoes? How did she put on those shoes? Why do those shoes have those features? There's someone else who made all, yeah, of those decisions for Jane. And so going behind the curtain to me is sort of interesting. And a little example here regarding, mm-hmm, the proverbial paywall, of course, is our friend Strava. Yeah, which I'm a big Strava fan. Yep. I've been to numerous Thanksgiving dinners at early Strava hires, and really good people. And they went with the premium, right? It was free, got a huge user base. They kind of took over the market. Then they added Strava premium, and nobody did it. They ended up laying off people after a year because people just didn't do it. And because you're looking at this, you're going, well, why should I do that? I'm getting all this for free. So finally, they reluctantly, yeah, I'm extraordinarily impressed with Strava. They could make bank tomorrow if they wanted to. They just, think if they put banner ads in your feed, I mean, they could go Facebook. They could make Zuckerberg run for his money. They don't do it. Strava is just unreal to me, the way they hold the line. But they finally moved the line back, and so they moved features behind the paywall, so you really should subscribe and become a premium member, which is worth it. Little editorial comment. The internet is not free, dude. You know, you're paying for it somewhere along the line. And if you find something you like, give them some money. They will keep doing it. Stop giving them some money and they will stop doing it.
So I am 1,000,000% in your corner, but it does go back to your earlier comment that unfortunately the market will decide.
Well, Finn, what about you? I mean, I've listened to your podcast and there's no ad roll on that.
Yeah.
And you're not even soliciting, yeah, anything. So, I mean, if you don't want to comment on this, that's fine. But right now I'm going, Finn, man,
you're doing a
good
definitely
job
will.
Here. Okay. Okay.
So I would be lying if I said I didn't have sponsorship conversations with various brands, but I've looked at the numbers and most of them want to go off a CPM model as opposed to a value-based model. And I'd need to have like a million listens a month in order to make even like a third of the salary that I make at my current 9-to-5 job. The numbers don't make sense. Like, I've just decided that the podcast is not going to be the way I make money. It's the way I build an audience. And then maybe from there you build assets and products based on learnings from that audience. But in my opinion, the media side, it's an audience builder. It's not really a place that you go to make money.
Finn, thank you for sharing
that. That's
just
my take. Going back to this. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to kind of turn it back at you because you're a smart man. And I appreciate what you just said. Hope people heard what you just said. The CPM model versus value-based. Boom. Wow. That I learned that one the first year also. You look at the amount of clicks you got to get at $11 per thousand. It's like, we have to put up pictures of naked people to get that many clicks, and that's not what we do. So I appreciate what you said. Very good. I like it.
Yeah. I think on the Strava front, it's interesting. I had Mark Ganey on the show. I also had Larissa Rivers on the show, who both are awesome. You just think about that company. You're glad that people like them are there.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, it's fascinating that they made a very significant decision to not be a multi-sided platform. They're not going to be a Facebook. They're not going to allow these third-party advertisers to come on, because that is an easy way to make money. That's a pump right there. But there's a consequence to that. And it's been really difficult for them to move users beyond the paywall, because frankly, the stuff on the front side of that paywall is already pretty dang good. Like, I personally subscribe to them simply because I want them to continue to be in existence, because they provide so much value to our community. Do I use a lot of those features beyond the paywall? Frankly, not really. But I think that what they do is so important that it's almost like this is just a thank you for doing what they do. And it's such a little amount of money. But sometimes I get concerned, like, how are they going to make it because of the ethical decisions they've made for their business model?
Finn, I appreciate you. I hope your listeners hear what you are saying. I hope they respect and understand what you said, because that was very sharp. Thank you.
Yeah. A couple more questions here. Just a couple miscellaneous ones. While you were busy building Fastest Known Time, I'm sure other related or unrelated trail running business ideas popped up that you didn't have time to pursue. Is there anything you'd like to see an entrepreneur go build for our community? Do you have any requests for trail running or endurance sports related startups?
Dang, what a far-reaching question. I would like to sound like a real smart guy and toss in some brilliant ideas here, but no, I don't really think I do. I will, but this is sort of conflictual to say it. Oops, but I'll say it anyway. The one thing I think the community could use is a really good podcast. So, I mean, I was doing a podcast. I thought it was good. It had good content. It had good elements, but, you know, it was kind of limiting. And like, you're sharp. You have a very nice sounding voice. You prepare in advance, but you're not all in on this because you need your 9-to-5 job to float the boat. I think there's space available here for something that's really good, that's in a different format. So that's the one thing that has occurred to me.
Who have been your favorite guests on the podcast over the years? If you could give three guests that were pretty memorable, who would they be?
Oh, man. Oh, now you've got me going, because
with the disclaimer that all were excellent, but there were just a couple that stood out.
Not quite all, but most were excellent. This is interesting. So I'll set the stage here a little bit. Of course, we had pandemic here for 2 years, and every time you listen to NPR, anyone talk, they always start off any story with, "And it's been terrible for everyone, and we're all just, you know, coming out of this horrible thing." That wasn't how it was for me. Actually, I was fine. And I think part of the reason I was fine is because of the podcast. I talked to these great people, I had lovely conversations. And Finn, I'm not sure how you feel about this, but I felt like I was in a room full of friends. Somehow I felt like it was with all my good friends. And maybe people listening to me thought I was a complete idiot and I was just making all this up, but somehow I felt warm in this warm community. And so that's part of how my context here. But I will identify a few people here. And the first person that's coming to my mind right now is Angela Baca. And I, of course, patting myself on the back for finding him, because he's never been on any podcast, to my knowledge. But he actually was a Division II runner, very good runner. The main thing I wanted him on for a perspective on Bears Ears. And Bears Ears was this big fight. You know, Patagonia came in, they were taking out ads in the New York Times, and the Trump administration were being complete idiots about the whole thing. It was like a fight, a political fight. And so I had Angelo come on, and he is ethnically half Hopi and half Navajo. This guy is coming from somewhere else, right? I loved this. I was so moved. And so he started just like you introduced me, and he said, "Well, first, I have to thank my ancestors, as I always do." And so he recited in native Navajo, his ancestral lineage. I'm sitting there just crying. I was so moved. This was next level stuff. And I've had, you know, really good runners on. They said, "Oh, I just ran this in this really fast time. Great. Very cool. I like that. Wish I could do that. But Angelus starts reciting in his native language. And then we enter into the Bear's Ears conversation. And his first sentence was, Bear's Ears is a place for healing. He didn't want to fight. He said, this is a place of healing. So, sorry, I could talk about that for a long time. That's one. And then I kind of like having my friends on. My last podcast, number 180, was sort of self-indulgent, as I had Jared on, I had Tony on, Hillary was on, kind of my buds. But then I'd also say what you just noted early on, Gary Cantrell. I don't think Gary's got enough play. Everyone knows Barkley. He's known for Barkley, but has anyone ever talked to Gary? So I talked with him. You heard that. This guy is something else. This guy's a whack job, and he's a genius, right? I mean, he is a savant.
He's both.
Oh my gosh. I don't think people grasp this. He's one of the world's unhealthiest people, who's supposedly a runner. This guy is brilliant. He changed the sport of ultra running forever. His legacy will go on for centuries. And I'm not sure if people quite grasp that. So that was one of my favorite convos, because I liked bringing some of his genius to light.
One question that I want to ask him is whether, with his races, if he's motivated to create something based on what's wrong with the sport or what's missing in the sport. And I think there is a distinction there, because it seems like he does kind of like to put up the middle finger to the sport a little bit. And I just want to know exactly where his motivations are, because again, 100% agree. What a genius. And frankly, what a great person. We're lucky to have him in the sport.
Right. Well, if you ask him, if you want to know exactly, don't ask him. You know what he's going to do? He's going to turn it on you. He's going to give you the Zen cone. He's going to give you the one-liner. And he's going to keep you guessing. He's going to keep you thinking. And he's not going to give you an exact answer. I'm so sorry. I just kind of, that's my guess. But have him on the podcast. Give it a go. And let me know. I'd love to listen. My third one, I think
those two were excellent, though.
Oh, thank you.
Those two were excellent.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I think my third one would have to be Christopher McDougall, you know, Born to Run. I think Born to Run is an epic. It's a milestone in the sport. It's the best book ever written on running. And I think he changed how people look at it forever. And Chris is very articulate, very sharp, a good storyteller. And my friend Stephanie, after she heard the podcast, she had a good comment. She said, Buzz, you met your match. You met someone who's totally your equal with being quick, being witty, telling stories. And she was right. I thought I was just delighted to have an opportunity to talk with Chris, who's just sharp, witty, great storyteller. And I liked meeting him. Mainly it's people I just like to meet.
Got one last question for you. I ask all guests this. If you could put a message on a billboard for all to see, what would it say and why?
Well, I would like to impart my decades of hard-earned deep wisdom, of course. And so I would say, time flies like an arrow. Fruit flies like a banana.
I have a couple thanks in order. First, thank you for being in the arena. Thank you for being an entrepreneur. Thank you for devoting so much of your life's work to our sport. It's a better place because of you.
Finn.
And I really appreciate your time on the pod.
Finn, that was very sincere. Thank you very, very much. I hope your listeners appreciate you as much as I do.
Hey folks, thanks as always for listening. If you enjoyed the conversation, all I ask is that you give it a share on your social media platforms and that you leave a rating or review wherever you listen to this podcast. Until next time, this is The Single Track, and I am your host, Finn Melanson.